Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fantastic, Jim. Just simply fantastic. How are you?
Excellent. Doing good. And thankfully, it looks like it's the beginning of spring, or at least it's starting to warm up, and so we're happy about that. And what, next week, or this weekend coming up, we get to change the clocks. So that means we're over the hump. So that's a good thing, at least
actually,
up here.
I understand there is a talk nationally that, to simply get rid of the daytime saving option to go to,
yep.
Okay.
Yeah, they are talking about that, and obviously, that's not what our show's about tonight, but it could be an interesting
right.
thing.
Yeah.
Tonight's show, definitely welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 64. Tonight's show is actually a continuation of a couple shows back. Questions from our listeners. We had so many questions come in, we really never had a chance to get to all of them, and we wanted to. So again, tonight, we're going to grab a few of the really hot ones and see what we can do about, answering them. And please feel free, keep them coming in, email them to us, send them to us, however you like. We'll do our best to make sure that they're answered. So with that, let's, Han, I'll let you start off with your first question that you and I were talking about before the show started.
Yeah, I think it's a worthwhile question and topic to discuss. I'm considering, this is out of Illinois. The docs say I'm considering to start my own practice. Who do I speak with first? Do I talk to the banker? Do I talk to the architect? Do I talk to the lawyer? And why? Want to give it a shot?
Absolutely. That's a common question, and actually another way to phrase that is, my bank wants to know how much I want to borrow. It's the same kind of thing that you want to talk about. The question is, who do you talk to first? Well, we recommend the first group or entity that you talk with is the architect, because right now you really don't have a understanding or the right information to make a determination about who is going to do what and what they're going to do and what that's actually going to cost. It's kind of like, I guess, Han, one of the ways to look at it, it's not like you go to the, when you go buy a house, most realtors are say, go to your bank and get pre-authorized for a certain amount of money. And then they'll use that as the qualifier to get you a bunch of houses to look at that all fit within that budget, that number. This is different. This is totally different. You do not approach it that way. You should not approach it that way. You can't approach it that way. What you're going to find yourself doing is getting yourself into trouble, because 9 times out of 10, you may say, I need to have 6 operatories, but the bank is only going to give you enough money to do 5. And then all of a sudden you're stuck. What do I do? Or how do I go about this? So what we recommend, and we'd love to at least start the initial conversation with you, is to get an idea of what your needs are. Once you've determined what those needs are, and I think we've even done shows on that, You may not even know what they all are. We'll help you go through that, but you have to basically get an idea that then is transferred into what we call that preliminary design document. That is something that can be given to a builder, and the builder will give you an estimate. He'll give you a cost based upon that preliminary design concept. You'll also give it to your equipment guy or girl. And when you do that, they'll give you an idea of what the equipment cost is going to be, whether you're going to buy, and you'll determine whether you're going to buy new or you're going to buy used or you're going to keep what you have or do a blend of all of that. So now you've got the probable cost of the construction. You've got the probable cost of the equipment. Now, if this is a brand new building, then you're going to have you need to have an idea of what the cost of the property might be. You may not even have your property yet, and that's fine. Actually, that's better to do it that way. Not even have a piece of property is the best solution, because then you can determine your needs up to what that piece of property needs to be, where it needs to be located, and that kind of stuff. So you have all of those numbers pulled together. You total them up. You take those documents, and you go to your bank and say, this is what I'd like to build. This is who I have talked to give me a cost. This is what we've identified as a possible piece of property if you don't have one. Or if it's a renovation, you're going to say, this is what I want to renovate. Or if it's a going into a retail facility, this is the retail facility I'm going to go into, and this is the lease that I'm going to be possibly signing. You have all that stuff. You go to the bank, and the bank says, they understand then exactly what you're trying to accomplish, and you're more likely to get the amount that you need versus a blank, what can I borrow based upon where I'm at right now? Does that make sense, Han?
Absolutely. I think that what we're alluding to is that you have to have something that, you know, that depict what it is that you want, what it is that you need, so that you can communicate with, you know, with the people that you deal with, a financial institution. I mean, right now, you know, the attorney is not there in the picture yet, because there is nothing for him to sign or review. You know, hopefully you're talk to your CPA so that he, you know, he give you some idea where you are financially and so on. But you have to have something that sketch out what it is that you're going to build or thinking about building. And then, like Jim said, take that and give it to a local contractor to give you a probable cost based on what have been presented. And you put in your numbers and stuff like that. Make sure you add a little contingency and, you know, include professional fees for the engineers, the architects, the furniture. I'm not talking about equipment, I'm talking furniture and, your operating capital and so on. And you have some idea what ultimately you need to have to pull this off. So ideally, we'll be the first one you talk to.
Absolutely.
Right?
And really, you know, it's an investment as opposed to a expenditure. That investment of, and it's actually relatively small in the grand scheme of things, to do the preliminary design work is a pretty small investment as compared to all the other stuff that you're going to get involved in when you start to do a project. That investment will pay you back huge dividends. We've seen it over and over and over again, where you go in there with all this information, the bank looks at you and say, this guy knows what, you know, he's got his stuff together. And they're, again, they're more than likely, and we've talked to lending institutions, and they say they're more than likely, they love dentists. They love them to death because they don't on average, very rarely, are financially in trouble. They're good investments. And so when they see that, they're going to say, you got your stuff together. We understand what you need. We understand your needs. Okay, here's how we can make this deal work based upon this. Now, they may be creative and they may say, we need to have a longer term, or we need to have these kind of terms to make this work. But bottom line is, they understand what you're trying to do. Because what happens is, if you don't, what's the downside, Han? The downside is what? You go in there and they say you can do, okay, we're going to give you $600,000. But when you find out and go through the process that, uh-oh, I actually need $900,000. Well, going back to the bank and asking for that difference, nine times out of ten, they can't or won't give it to you. So then you've got to be creative. You either find some other way. Or the project dies.
You start to get it from Paul and Peter to get your project off the road. One other thing, Jim, let's take this a little further, okay? In the preliminary phase, the ideal time to get the architect involved in discussing about your needs and your like and your want, stuff like that, is before you actually sign the lease, okay?
Yes.
Before you before you bought the property. The worst, and we see this all the time. Lease, that's a different issue because usually most of our clients don't come to us after they sign the lease. They usually come out to us, while they're negotiating their lease and, getting the final legal language fine-tuned and all that stuff. So that's a different animal. But when we have clients who bought buildings, bought land, and then come to us and say, I bought a piece of land with a building and I like to use it, it's a house. Okay? And you go like, oh, welcome to the rental business. Or they buy a piece of land that assume it's, let's say it's 2 acres and they only need, half an acre. But that piece of land is, just measure at the base of a mountain, and the plateau is only an eighth of an acre. Then you bought a land ideally the size that will work, but the net usable space doesn't. So ideally, get your invest into a little bit of having a design professional walk you through the process, make sure that what you're getting into or what you're looking at will work for you. Otherwise, you will be throwing your money away, and now you're trying to figure out how you're going to make it work. Okay? It's a reactive mode, and we'd rather that you approach it from a proactive mode, and it's less stressful, less expensive. So don't buy it.
Very, very much so. It's less stressful, less expensive, saves you time. Because we have all talked about time. Time is a huge money drain. If it takes you 2 years to build a project that should have been done in a year, you've lost a whole year's worth of productivity, which is a huge amount of money. No matter how many operators you have, it's just a huge amount of money. So all those things are crucial. You really, really, really take the investment of pulling somebody like ourselves, a design professional who understands, can put together a preliminary concept that can be priced, that can then give your equipment supplier the idea of how much equipment you need to have and so on. Now, Han, I'm going to throw a question by you. You get the equipment supplier to provide you with that initial concept?
I think you can. It depends on what it is that you're contemplating buying from them. Okay.
Well, but I'm gonna do the caveat with that.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Are you shortchanging yourself?
The answer is yes.
You remember, the equipment supplier will probably do it for free if you're buying equipment. But is it really
free? There is some swampland in Florida I'm going to give it to you for free. Okay. I understand what you're getting at, Jim. The answer is yes, they can give you a free conceptual design. Would it have the same level of value with the same level of knowledge and experience that give you the confidence that your investment can be carried on and move forward to further fine-tune, not correct or redone, but fine-tune, okay? No, they will not. What you get will not be comparable to what the design professional, such as an architect, will produce for you, because by nature, when you work with architects, they don't just design; they solve pertinent problems. They work out all the things that could give you pain. They make sure that everything is in its proper place, whether it's on a site or inside the building, so that there is no unnecessary hiccup or rework. Did I answer your question?
Well, actually, Han, that leads us into the next question that came through to us that I think it's very important, and it's a perfect segue into that. And it's the whole issue of plan stamping. Now, can you define plan stamping? And let's talk about that in the whole procedural process in relationship to, you know, doing a dental project.
Yes. Plan stamping, it's not what you think it is. It's not where an architect or an engineer take their seals out and stamp the drawing. It comes with a, let me say, when you hear the term plan stamping, it comes with a little bit of raised eyebrow, a little bit of chuckle. What happened is this, and I don't want to say it's a common practice, but it is a strategy that's often used by individual or organization that are willing to sidestep what is required by law. You have a majority of the jurisdiction in the United States require that a commercial project to have to be done, the work, the design work and all that is to be done by a licensed architect in their state, or be done under the supervision of a licensed architect in their state. So when the work is done, they know that it's done according to, to the industry standard. It's done according to the current code and all that good stuff. From time to time, if you work, and I see, and I don't want to point a finger, but I think I will because I have to, is that plan stamping occurs when a construction organization had promised the client that they'll handle everything. It's very rare that we run into a small and medium-sized construction company that have their own architects and engineering staff. So they may have a drafter that will draw out, the layout and basically do a construction package. And that individual is not supervised or have any communication with an architect. He or she may be well equipped to do the work, but the law dictate that they need to be work under the supervision of an architect, licensed architect. So when that work is done, the contractor may take it to a architect friend or local architect who are not involved in the project, who have absolutely no idea what's going on with the project except it's maybe a dentist's office, and his client will be ABC Construction Company. He takes it, he or she takes it, and affixes his or her stamp on it and takes responsibility for the work that he or she did not do. And that allowed the contractor to submit that drawing or the construction document for permit. That is done more than we like it to see. And that's done under the pretense that it will save the client money. Well, believe it or not, the client paid for the services somewhere in the process. He or she isn't saving anything. If the money is not spent on the engineering and the architecture services by the owner coming out of the owner's pocket, it is buried somewhere in the construction expense. And so when the architect that did not work on the project sealed the drawing for permit, he or she violate the code of ethics, the professional code of ethics. And I do believe that by doing that, it's also an illegal move. And the ramification, if discovered, is that he or she may have to pay a fine and may lose their professional license. And when that happened, and let's say hypothetically that the construction document went through the review process and got approved for construction, and the work has started. You're in the middle of the construction, and that discovery that set of drawings was sealed by an architect that didn't work on the project and does not work on the project after he or she sealed the drawing. The code official, the building official, can shut it down, shut down the project until you rectify and make it legal. Am I on track so far, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
basically,
to use the vernacular, it's a cluster. It's a cluster of problems.
Yeah, I have had a few people that actually say, hey, that's fear mongering. I've worked closely with a
This never happens. No, it never happens.
That's right. It never happened. Okay. It only happened to other people. And you say, well, will they actually do that? Yes, they will do that. They can, because it's within their authority to shut you down. It's embarrassing when your building project got shut down because you were involved in an illegal, unethical practice of plant stamping. Whether you, the owner, condone it knowingly or unknowingly, but you're involved, and that's why, it has that shotgun effect. You just happen to be, your name is on the project. So plant stamping is one of those things that we encourage you to confirm, avoid, and make sure that whoever worked on your project, whoever put the stamp on the drawing, actually work on the project. We prefer that, and we advise that you work directly with the architect and not the architect working for the contractor who worked for you.
Right, yep. Right. Now, there's another aspect to this, and obviously, you very succinctly covered the issues of the legalities. Now, there's the whole aspect of, are you really getting the very best people and having the best abilities working on your particular project by doing this? And here's the example. You have an organization, whoever they might be, there's a bunch of them out there, and that individual or that organization has some designers on its team, and these designers create the documents. They create design documents to some level of whatever they are. It could be everything from just initial concepts to packages that call out things like furniture that even go to the trouble of calling out what materials are being used in what locations and even what colors have been picked or what flooring is being used or what the interior design aspect of the project is. And all of that is put into a document. Okay. Now, remember, none of these people that have been creating this are licensed designers, meaning licensed architects. There's no such thing as a licensed designer. That doesn't exist. An architect gets a license. A designer does not. Now, none of those folks are licensed, but they're creating documents that are then, to one degree or another, utilized as you move forward with your project. Now, some groups may say, now you take it to a local architect and have the local architect work with it from there. Or you take it to a builder, and the builder will find a local architect to effectively do the plan stamping that we just talked about. And or maybe add something to it if there needs to be something added to it. But again, that initial group that's doing the design work is not licensed. They're not trained in the aspects of life safety, which is one of the biggest reasons why, for example, I had to go through the process to get a license, to be a licensed architect in this state and many other states across the country. That's the whole issue of the life safety component. Now, it's all about dealing with the HON. You said it succinctly. You deal with the code. You deal with the constructability. You deal with the aspect of how things need to work together, meaning how does the equipment people do their job? How does the mechanical people do their job? How the electrical, the structural, the plumbing, the architecture, that all needs to work together. Okay. And the architect is trained, tested, and licensed to do that. So by having someone else provide that document and create it, Han, how's the best way to describe that? That's like you asking me to do a root canal, right?
I won't.
Yeah, I know. I won't do it because I'm not a dentist. A dentist is a licensed individual who does root canals. I'm an architect. I understand how to build things. I'm very good with my hands. I know how to build. I have built many things. I build many things, and I know how to design. I know how to create and know how to do that stuff when it comes to to architecture and projects. I don't know how to do root canals. So I guess the moral of the story, Han, is the best way to describe it is don't ask the architect to do the root canal. It's the same difference as ask a designer.
And the dentist
don't ask the designer to do architecture. Because
there is a sign or red flag that you can see. Okay. When you have people that provide so-called design services, and on the document that they had provide to you, they have a disclaimer.
Oh boy.
They put a disclaimer on there to say things like, zoning ordinance have not been reviewed, building code have not been reviewed, accessibility guideline had not been reviewed. What have they reviewed to do the design? I mean, the important thing that you mentioned is life, safety, and health. Those are the three pillars that rules over the type of work that architects do. So if you have not reviewed building code, accessibility guideline, which is governed, overseen, and enforced by the Department of Justice, you're being set up for a potential problem.
Right. Well, and potential problems and or extra costs. Basically, it's pushing one cost, taking one cost away and pushing costs onto and responsibility onto you, the dentist, to go do something. You know, so you've got to either go find a local architect or you have to go find a local builder who finds a local architect or some other way to be able to get to the point of being able to build this project. Because bottom line, except for one state or two states in the U.S. here, you have to have a licensed architect on your project. That's the law. But it's not just the law. It's good practice. It's good investment because if we do the initial, is the licensed architect, it doesn't have to be us. We'd love it if it was us, but it doesn't have to be us. If we do the initial concept, the initial design work, the initial creation, we carry that all those concepts through to the end, including to the point where you're through construction. But at the same time, we're integrating from the very beginning all of those components, life safety, constructability, integration with the engineers so that all of it works. How many times, Han, have we seen initial design layouts for, say, for an existing retail center that don't show the existing columns that are in the space? And, you know, we take over the project, we look at that thing, we lay that out, and all of a sudden, oh, man, that column's right in the middle of the corridor. Or that column is in the wrong place based upon where the operatories have to be. We have seen that more times than we can imagine.
Yep. Another thing that are overlooked and it costs you money is the location of the electrical service panel.
Oh, that's a huge cost to move those things. Oh my God, we're talking about big dollars.
So you know, I mean, I've seen. All right,
I'll give you another one, and again, folks, we're not fear mongering here. We're giving you the straight scoop on stuff that we have seen that you shouldn't have to do. You should not have to go through this. We don't want you to have to go through this. Here's another one. Not enough restrooms.
Oh, that would be, right offhand, you lose approximately 50 square feet, excluding circulation, right?
Could mean the difference of an operatory. You could lose an operatory easy.
Absolutely.
By not having that integrated from day one. That stuff needs to be integrated from day one. And I can tell you this, on correct me if I'm wrong, there's not a designer out there that will investigate the requirement of amount of restrooms on a project before they start the design work.
Very few. I can't think
of one.
Okay. This is things that associate with code. And if you don't confirm the code up front before you design, you know, you're kind of shooting from the hip. Okay.
Well, that's why they put a disclaimer on the drawings.
These
documents do not reflect the code requirements of your specific location. Please, it's your responsibility to verify this before moving forward.
Well, actually, they probably put in a really nice language is that take what we've created, give it to some SAPSOP that, you know, and locally that will put the seal on the drawing and take the responsibility for it.
Yeah.
Okay. That, yeah. That is not fun. All right. So anyway, yeah, plan stamping isn't a good thing to, you know, to do. Those who, you know, when you want to ensure that the project is designed accurately with the best possible route to success to you, start it with the people who know what to do, okay? Not just people that create documents to place the chair and the autoclave and things like that, because equipment installation drawing isn't construction documents that are designed to the architectural and engineering standards. Jim?
Yeah, exactly. And let's look at it from a cost standpoint. This doesn't save you any money. It doesn't save you any fees. That we can say for a certain. It does not. Okay, because really what ends up happening is you end up paying multiple times. You pay this designer, whomever, coming up with it, and unless you say, well, I'm going to get it free from the equipment supplier, but in reality, those documents are, you know, they're great for equipment, but they're terrible from all the other aspects. So 9 times out of 10, they're pretty much useless and have to be really reworked. Okay. So you pay for that. And then you have to get a local architect with the necessary engineers and you pay for them. So it's fee upon fee upon fee, when in reality, if you just went to the architect who understands dentistry day one and have them lead the whole rest of the team, you know, including the equipment people, including anyone else that's necessary, engineers and that kind of stuff.
Jim.
Yeah, you pay less. You really do. You pay less. Go ahead, Hon.
This is for folks that live in Texas. Okay, Texas is one of those states that does not require an architect involvement for a project under 5,000 square feet. This is not a exercise to drum up business for us in Texas. Okay, so this is free. Even though the state do not require that you use the service and architect, I stopped counting the number of drawings that been presented for design critique come out of Texas that looked like it was done by seventh grader in a drafting class. If you're looking for a number of treatment rooms that get thrown together into a box, you get your shopping list met. But the functionality, the efficiency, and all of that is not there. You're simply having a contractor throw together something so that they can build something for you so that you have something as an office. As a highly educated professional, don't scrimp on the pennies. Invest into the service of an architect so that they can help you to design an office that you know that are enduring, that are efficient, that are done with purpose and intention, that will serve you for the duration of your practice there. It's done right. It's done with the, you know, the type of principle that makes a good design a good, a good building or a good office, right? You pay for that service with your involvement with your contractor. Don't fool yourself. There is nothing that's free, okay? Do yourself the favor that you deserve and hire an architect to be involved on your project with you, for you, whether the state says that you must or not. There.
Well, and to add to that, Hon, it's a very important point to add to that. This is a massive investment that you're probably only going to do one time. I mean, sure, there's a few out there that have done two or three, and that's great. More power to them. But more than likely, you're going to do this probably once in your career. You're going to, you know, either build or renovate, and you're going to be there for a while and say, okay, that's great. That was very painful. We've heard these stories, haven't we, Han? You know, that was very painful, and I don't ever want to do that again. I'll just continue to make it through what I've got here, and then, you know, then I retire, or I'll give it off to somebody else. So this is probably a once in a lifetime investment. So you really need to do it right. It's in your best interest to do it right as an investment, which will pay you dividends every day that you walk into that building, that you walk in there, that your staff walks in there, but mostly every day that your patients walk in. Because if there's something wrong, or if something's subpar, or something that's inadequate, it will gnaw at you for the rest of your career. You'll either hear it from your patients, or you'll hear it from your staff. You'll hear it from your wife or your husband. You'll hear it over and over and over again. And that's not worth any money.
Yeah. You might even hear it from your inner self. Okay.
And you might say, why the hell did I do that? Why did I do that? Right.
Here's a question, Jim. Actually, this is a discussion, ongoing discussion, and it came out of Texas. You know, the layout and all that stuff is done, and there is deficiencies in the design. Okay, major deficiency. And the comment that was that I last read was, "I'm gone so far with the design that I can't change it anymore." And, you know, for me, often most people don't like changes. But if you can get more value out of the project, quantify value, and it's not under construction yet, it's just simply ink on paper, why not? Why not the change? If it can improve your life, and it may give you a more efficient layout to work with. It give you more space to move around in. It wiped out, you know, majority of your waste of circulation space that's not necessary. Why not? The part that I really hard for me to grasp and understand is, why is the hesitation and the reservation from project owner from asking, can I change this? Any idea?
That I can't understand, because the best time, especially in this day and age, I mean, anybody worth their salt is no longer drawing on a piece of paper. We're doing it all in the computer. You know, it's all done in the computer, so it's changeable. It's very easily changeable. It can be moved around. These tools that we have available to us, unlike back when Han and I started this crap, right? We used to draw on paper. We used to draw on things called Mylar. We used to draw on stuff that was transparent with ink pens. Oh, God. That just,
yeah.
You know,
oh, God.
That, just makes, that just makes the hair in the back of my neck stand up. you know, you didn't want to draw a line incorrectly because it was a pain in the butt to erase. But, you know, nowadays you can change stuff. You can change things in hours versus days. So, okay,
yep.
it cost another $2,000 to have your architect rework something. You added an operatory, or you added this much square footage. What does that give you over a lifespan of that project? Well, if you change something and you got to add another operatory, that's $20,000 to $30,000 a month. Was a $2,000 investment worth it? Darn right.
Yeah.
I mean that investment just screams. Or you know, you added a particular thing that whatever that was, or you changed it and it got you five more patients every month.
Wow.
And
Jim,
talk about
besides the production gain, okay, there's a thing that you can't put money on.
You're right.
How do you price happiness? Okay, imagine this. You spent let's say $300,000-$500,000 to do, you know, to build out a space. You line the wall with gold and ivory, okay? Because you brag about it. How much I spent on it. And every time you open the door, it bangs. You know, the front door, it bangs against the furniture, and you go like, oh man, we should have fixed that. Or every time that you go to the back door, you have to migrate to two or three rooms to get into your suite. You know, little things that could be changed or improved because the right people looking at it, they solve the problem, they solve the design problem, they solve the circulation problem, they solve the functional mishaps and so on, and it makes your life better. You can't put a price on that. So if it's not built yet, okay, I encourage you to get the courage to say, change it. Because
another aspect it has to do with is comfort. Comfort has no price tag. It's invaluable.
No.
Comfort of yourself, comfort of your staff, but mostly comfort of your patients. You can't put a price tag on that. But it's a disaster if any one of those three entities are not comfortable. And that could include everything from visual comfort to actual comfort from like heating or air conditioning or lighting, all those kind of things. And you know, all of that has to be done by professionals who understand dentistry and understand what you're doing and how you do that. Specialists like ourselves who understand this stuff and have done it and done it many, many times. I mean, there's a whole subject. Han and I could go on for hours talking about how to pick the right entity to do your project. You know, a local guy that maybe or girl that, you know, that's an architect that maybe is a patient might not be the best entity to design your new office because they've never done a dental office before. Or somebody that's only done one or two dental offices. Dental offices are complicated buildings. They're complicated systems. They're one of the most complicated. And
it needs a lot of collaboration. It needs a lot of coordination. You have a dentist's office. Let's say compared to your family physician, you got a larger army of people working on the project because there's so much coordination that need to be done. You have people with specialty skills that need to be part of the team that you normally don't see in other commercial building projects. So. Having the not just the right people with the right skill, with the right mindset, that are not afraid to voice and to share ideas and things like that. People who can solve problems, okay,
right.
Not just simply,
and most often know the questions to ask, even if you don't know what the questions are. That's a big thing. Well, here, Han, I'm going to throw one more question in before we run out of time tonight. And this one is an interesting one that came from over in Tennessee. I have existing equipment that I'd like to use in my new facility. This equipment, from what I understand in the question, is relatively new. It's in good shape. How do I go about this? What would we say, Don?
Well, I think it depends on your working relationship with your supplier. If you're not buying anything from them, the incentive is not there for them. Okay, some organization will provide relocation service. Some won't. So you just got to make sure that you have that discussion early on, so that way you have at least that duck in the row for you. If you're buying, let me see, because a lot of our clients are young startup, and when you don't have a lot of financial resource, you're looking for every way that you can to pull money back and reallocate it someplace else. So refurbished equipment is a common occurrence on startup projects. Those when you deal with existing and or older equipment, refurbished equipment, so with that, you lose the privilege or the advantage of having equipment people that deal with it on days in, days out to help you out. The information on your existing equipment may not be readily available. You might not even be able to find it online. Things that your engineering team may need to work with. Nowadays, because of energy conservation, you no longer have unlimited power, to tap into. So everything that goes into your office space have to be accounted for in the term of power usage. So they may need to know what does your pan, how much power does your pan need? How much power does your autoclave need? How many autoclave you have? What does your chair require? And on. There is just almost a gazillion questions that you may not be able to answer. And if you don't have an equipment people involved in a project because it's refurbished, even refurbished companies may not have the answer for you. I was blessed enough to work on a few projects that we have refurbished equipment that they have no idea what we're talking about. They have no idea where to find the information. So we have to, we have to do the, I let our finger do the walking on the internet and call the manufacturer, beg to see if they have anything that they can share with us. So that way we can have the proper information, specification, and all that stuff to share with our team. Okay, so it has a different level of need, not just from the financial side of how much you can save, who's going to move it, who's going to reinstall it, who's going to certify it, who's going to calibrate it, and then who's going to service and all that stuff. You, the building owner, the practice owner, have to look at all those things. Sometimes your equipment may be, 20 years old. Maybe you only have another year of life left. Maybe it's time to boost up and buy new. Only you can determine that because it takes money. It's your money. We can tell you how to spend it.
Yep. But the big thing, the moral of that question is prepare and understand that you will have a coordination line item. There will be a pretty large coordination line item that'll cost you some money necessary for that. You've got to have that coordination, which will talk about things like utilities, location of anchor points, structural integrities, all the things that are electrical requirements, plumbing requirements, adjacency requirements, in some cases, shielding requirements having to do with, lead lined walls and where those have to be located, all that kind of good stuff that has to be determined that you're given as part of your package if you buy something new. But since you're not buying something new and you're using what you already have and or buying something used, that has to be all determined so that can be integrated into. But then on top of that, you've got the other aspect. and that's the coordination of actually doing it. So if you're taking your six ops and you're stripping all of the stuff out of your six operatories and you're putting it into your new 8 or 12 operatory space, how do you go about doing that? Well, you sure aren't going to be doing that over a weekend. And so you have to really work with the builder, the entity that's going to be tearing apart your system and then reinstalling that. And that's going to take some time. That's going to take some focus. That's going to take some coordination between everybody, including your staff, because all of a sudden you're going to have to cut back on uses of your operatories. You may lose some of them over a period of time to be able to accomplish that. Don't expect that that can happen over, you know, start on Friday, be done on Monday. More than likely, that kind of stuff doesn't happen. I mean, things are possible, but you'll pay a pretty good premium for that.
Planning is everything.
You've got to coordinate. Yeah, you've got to coordinate that. Yeah. And then you hope and pray that everything perfectly lines up so that you can do what's necessary, especially if you're taking it from a existing retail space and putting it into a new retail space, with 9 times out of 10 is sitting on a concrete slab, which hopefully has all the stuff in the floor exactly where it should be, so that all they can do is say, if you're moving a chair, you move it over and plug it in and connect up the utilities to it, and away you go. If there's one little hiccup, you're not looking at hours, you're looking at days.
Now, Jim, there's an exception to this rule, okay, about equipment. And it's not about refurbished equipment, but it's equipment that you buy brand new from a virtual vendor who's not involved in the installation. So they don't sell to a distribution network. And you are responsible for the coordination of their equipment. You are responsible for the receiving of the equipment. So if you, the dentists that are doing the project and you're entertaining buying, equipment from a vendor that do not have the traditional distribution, channel, just make sure that you relay that to your team. Make that decision early. Gather the information or request that information from the from the manufacturer that sell directly to the public, and make sure that the coordination of deliveries and handling and shipping and storage and all of that is either delegated to your construction team, your office team, or yourself, or somebody. That way it's not a surprise. Oh, by the way, the semi pulled up and we have, 8 pallets of furniture and equipment that we need to dump into your unfinished office space. Okay. It has happened. And I was like, oh, really? Okay. It's everything needs to be coordinated and communicated, and communication is huge, and that's where a lot of the problem and project breakdown occur. Jump.
Yep, it does. And again, Han and I are not trying to be fear mongers. We're hopefully answering the questions that we've been given, but we. Again, there's no reason why you have to experience any of these issues. That's why we do this show. There's no reason why you have to experience these. You've been given information. Now you get the chance to go use it. It's valuable information, in our opinion, very valuable, and you get to go use it. And we're glad to give it because we want you to succeed. Now, Han and I have not even touched the surface on all the things that are out there. There's a lot of other stuff that has to be done, a lot of other things that are talked about, a ton of stuff that we haven't even talked about. But we've hit the highlights just to show you that the need to really have a team member, specifically an architect, who understands dentistry, who's done it, who's a, you know, an expert, has expertise, who's gone through this time and time and time again, and you're not paying for them to learn how to do dental projects. Because that's a pretty painful learning curve that's actually pretty costly in a lot of ways. But hopefully, it you know, tonight's show has been informative. Han, you were going to say?
No, I say it would be an unfortunate thing that you pay somebody to go to college to learn something to do for you. You know?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we've hit the time limit again. It's amazing how quick an hour goes.
Yes, it is.
You know, obviously, thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of our community. Thank you for being part of our show. Keep those questions coming in. Feel free at any time to call Han or I. We're here to help. We're here to, you know, this is what we'd like to do. We really like doing this. And that's why we exist. That's why this company exists. And we're real thankful for that. We're thankful for you listening, and look forward to, like you say, opportunity next week to go over another bunch of cool questions, if that or a topic that we select. So Han, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, I'm surprised how fast we can blow through an hour. I appreciate you spending the evening with us. And I hope you learn something and have fun learning it. Until next time, have a great evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.